8:16 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the Summit County Council was presented with next year's budget yesterday. On the phone with details, Summit County Council member Claudia McMullen. Good morning, Claudia.
Morning, Leslie.
So not a lot of comments yesterday from council. I guess, Jill, just what, a lot of new information all at once?
Exactly. It's just the first of what are going to be many hearings in the next 2 months, many meetings in the next 2 months. It was our first introduction to the budget after the budget committee has worked all through the summer and the manager has been working his tail off, and we just get our first overview of what's to come.
Since you decided not to run for re-election, this is your last budget. If you can think back, can you give us some kind of comparison how the first budget you faced as a member of the county council was back in 2009?
The first budget the budget we inherited in 2009 was passed by the commission, right? So the first budget we faced was, it didn't get bad, really bad, until 2010. That's when it got really bad, and that's when we were in full-bore recession, and we had to dip it to our general fund. And then when we survived that, but we had to do it, we did a tax increase. So this budget, in comparison to the budgets I've survived, is a dream from what I could see so far, because we've had some rough years and we've been good for the past 2 or 3 years and we're on the upswing, and I'm thrilled to leave the county in the financial situation it's in. But I do think we have challenges, and I do think that the community is going to have to figure out how much they want to pony up to fix the problems that we have, because otherwise, you know, we'll be trickling in, you know, the solutions will be trickling in rather than, you know, being able to accomplish big things with, you know, for example, the two propositions that are on the ballot right now. We could actually accomplish something good quickly with those proceeds.
So there really are no additional employees in the budget other than the two that were already approved this year. So does that mean that we have built the staff back up since the lean years?
I think we have built the staff back up, but we have pressure. We have pressure in the we have staffing pressure to keep staff and to pay them, and to particularly the newer hires and the lower level staff. From what I heard last night, we didn't get into a lot of detail about it, but I heard there's some salary pressure that we're going to be feeling.
All right. Well, let's walk through the proposed 2017 capital projects. First, starting with roads in Pine Brook, Jeremy Ranch, and Silver Creek. This is just annual maintenance of $2.4 million.
Yes, that's just the annual major maintenance that we do every year in those in that area.
Wow. I mean, are we talking like total repavements, or I mean, that sounds.
Yeah, I don't know the details of what the 2.4 is comprised. We are going to hear that next week from engineering.
All right. And if, in fact, Prop 10 is approved, then you'd have about $2.1 million to start making some critical road improvements. What do these look like?
The first one, from the county's perspective, so remember that the tax is a countywide tax. So the proceeds that we get will be shared with Park City Municipal as well as the other the municipalities on the east side. But the county's first major priority is the Ecker Hill Park and Ride. And then I'm not sure exactly what Park City's highest priority is, but whatever we can to address that from those proceeds, we will be doing the same, and we'll be looking towards the municipalities on the east side for what their priorities are.
All right. Also, a bunch of work at the 3 Mile landfill. We expect.
Yes, apparently, we're filling our current cell faster than we anticipated. So we're going to need to begin the landfill cell expansion in 2017 for an estimated $1.2 million.
My understanding is that the county doesn't have the permits, though, to begin that landfill.
I do not know the information. I don't know that. I've never heard that, so I can't confirm or deny. I have no idea. But I'll ask next week.
Okay. More than $13 million for new facilities. Talk to me about these.
So it's the Camas building. Now, the Camas building is the library that has been that has been designed as being built in the old library has been taken down. So that $5 million is a carryover from 2016 to build the Camas building. Then we have the fairgrounds, which is $5 million of initial improvements for the new fairgrounds. And that $5 million amount, according to Tom last night, is a placeholder for the moment. We're not exactly sure what that amount is. But in any event, those funds come from the TRT. And then we have the property purchase of Klein Dolly for $3.7 million, and those funds are coming from open space, affordable housing. Apparently, we have an affordable housing fund, and there's some fund balance in there. And then some municipal services, some money from the municipal services fund. That's the source of the $3.7 million, and that's an option that we have on that property.
Right. When do the budget meetings start?
We're having another one next week. And then we have, from what I remember, we're meeting at least two Mondays and the Wednesdays of November. And probably the same is going to go forward in December. We haven't gotten our calendar yet, sent to us. But normally what we do is we meet every Monday and every Wednesday, November and December, until we pass the budget, and we listen to all the departments, and we ask questions, and we go through the budget in gruesome and very detailed fashion, and then we have two hearings, and the last hearing, I think, is scheduled for December 14th, where we will pass whatever that budget will look like at that time.
All right. County Council taking public input on the sales taxes. It looks like the open house in Colville didn't draw a single person. How do you read that?
I read it that Caroline and Alfred, the city and the county, have just done a terrific, and Julie, have done a great job of informing the public about these propositions, because these propositions are in direct response to our community's number one demand and frustration, which is to do something to mitigate traffic and to improve our transportation options. And the staff worked all year on, and we had subcommittees and we had JTAB, and we've been working towards this. We've been talking about this. We've been having open houses, many, many open houses. And I really just think that the community understands what these propositions are for, and they're responding directly to the community's concerns. That's what I truly think as to why, 20 days out, we're not getting a lot of people at the meetings, because people are aware.
All right. You did get some public comment asking that the transit services remember the needs of service workers who work well past midnight. Do we have late night, early morning bus routes planned?
I know that we have late night, but we definitely do not have as late as Angelique was discussing for the service workers who close bars and close the restaurants on Main Street and might need a ride at like 2 o'clock in the morning. My suspicion is that what Angelique said is incredibly timely and is very, very much needed, and I'm sure that what she said has been heard by both the county and the city, and that JTAB will look to see what we can do together to satisfy those concerns, because I think they are very real, and I think we need to get we need to have more efficient transportation for our service workers.
Finally, any thoughts on what should be done with the Klein Dolly lot? As you noted, we're setting aside about $3.7 million to purchase this acreage there in Lower Jeremy.
My thought is, I have a broad thought on that property, just as I have it's the same thought I have on any opportunity that presents itself to us in the Snyderville Basin, where there is a property acquisition possibility, because we have so little property available, and we have many problems to solve. So when there's a possibility of purchasing a piece of property that could potentially solve a problem or two for the basin and for the community, I'm a proponent of grabbing that property. Now, in this instance, the two the two issues facing the community that are their number one and number two issues are transportation and affordable housing. What it looks like on that property, or how those two issues will be addressed on that property, I don't know what that looks like, but that's what my hope would be for that property. It would be something, someone or combination of both to solve some issues that face our community that we hear about constantly, and we don't get a lot of opportunities to acquire property to address those issues.
Okay, Claudia, anything else you wanted to mention?
The only thing is the Home Energy Score pilot program launch that happened this week, and I'd love for people to go onto summitcounty.org's homepage and sign up if they qualify. First come, first serve till December 31st, 2016. And we're very excited about the program as we move towards achieving our sustainability goals.
I've got that story queued up right after now, so thanks.
Well, nice.
Yeah. That's Summit County Councilmember Claudia McMullen. Planned Parenthood celebrating its 100th anniversary this month. Joining me on the phone is the president and CEO of the Planned Parenthood Association of Utah, Carrie Galloway. Good morning, Carrie.
Good morning. What a delightful morning to join you.
Well, thanks for being with us. First, let's just get a little history lesson here. Any idea what caused the formation of Planned Parenthood? I mean, can you talk a little bit about the conditions for women 100 years ago that really birthed this organization?
Well, Margaret Sanger was a public health nurse in Brooklyn, New York, and she felt strongly that the women she tried to tend to were at the mercy of, to be perfectly honest, their husband's sexual desires, in that there were no family planning options for them. And if their husband wanted to have sexual intercourse, the chance of pregnancy was high. And there were women having continual pregnancies, not good spacing of children, and not enough money 100 years around ago to really feed and nurture their families. And so for her, it was a mission to try and figure out a way for a woman to be able to control her own fertility. And the pessary was available in Europe. That would be what we now call the diaphragm. Not a widely used method of contraception, but the most available she could get. And she worked with a doctor in Europe who sent her them, and she taught women how to use them. There was a law in the United States called the Comstock Laws that said you couldn't send anything that was morally objectionable through the mail. And that's what she ended up in jail on, for educating women about family planning and spacing their children. And I think her first clinic was originally opened on October 16th, 100 years ago, and lasted a little less than a week when she went to jail with her sister and some other friends. And unfortunately, that was the first war on women 100 years ago. And we seem to be having little skirmishes ever since.
Yeah. We should note that the Planned Parenthood Association of Utah has been around for just 50 of those years. And when people think about Planned Parenthood, many, of course, think about birth control and abortions. But abortion is really, I think, just a tiny fraction of the services actually provided by your clinics. Yeah?
Yeah. If you look at the financials of Planned Parenthood of Utah, it would account for about 3% of the business of Planned Parenthood. In reality, we see close to 50,000 men and women every year for basic reproductive health care, for prescription methods of contraception, over-the-counter methods, and to preserve their fertility through sexually transmitted disease, testing and treatment, through good health care with pap smears for women, self-testicular exam for men, so that they can stay healthy and have building a family when they choose.
So in terms of the number one reason for people visiting you, is it for family planning?
Oh, definitely. The reality is, through our 9 clinics and 12 contracts around the state, almost 50,000 people visit us at least once or twice a year for refills for prescriptions, for testing, treatment, annual exams, and education purposes to make sure that their questions are answered about preserving their fertility, family planning, safe and responsible sexual behavior.
So here in Park City a few years ago, we saw the number of teen pregnancies shoot up. I had heard this week that those numbers have leveled off, but just heard on the news this morning that STIs, sexually transmitted infections, are higher than ever. So what's going on? What are we seeing?
Well, you know, we as a society, to be perfectly honest, aren't real good about discussing good reproductive health care practices openly and honestly. And so a lot of people engage in casual sex without disclosing to their partners who their other partners are, whether they've been tested, what their status is. And people don't think about protecting themselves, first off, because we don't use it as a public health message. And unfortunately, in our state, so much is done secretively. And we have a fairly high chlamydia and gonorrhea rate for the compared to our surrounding neighbor states. And my worry is with chlamydia for women, repeated incidents of chlamydia can lead to infertility before they even have a chance to think about starting a family.
Wow. Now, those are easily treated with antibiotics when you talk about those. But then we have the whole issue of herpes and venereal warts. I mean, that's something that a person lives with forever.
They do, but we can help them learn to live with it. It's unfortunately a result of unprotected intercourse. But, you know, one thing I'm very proud of Planned Parenthood in the Park City area is that we have worked with so many wonderful partners. You spoke about the teenage pregnancy issue we had a few years ago. We have worked with the People's Clinics and other partners to hold mother-daughter and father-son and young people education for those early years just out of puberty, helping young people make good decisions, giving them information and education, and also encouraging them to talk to their parents and people older who they trust to help them make good decisions about their reproductive health care. And we also have a fantastic program in Summit County with older teens in the high school called Teen Council. And that group is doing wonderful work in the Park City area. They're the young people who blog during Sundance. And last spring, they held their first ever Know Before You Go workshop at the end of the school year that was approved by the school district, and they talked to all graduating seniors who were going off to live on their own, whether it be to college or technical school or just venturing far from home with their own apartment, about consent and keeping safe with their reproductive health care and positive interactions with other young people. And, you know, these young people are going to be our leaders of tomorrow, and I'm thrilled with the work that they're doing in Summit County and in the other counties in the state when they hook up with Planned Parenthood.
A few years ago, the Planned Parenthood Park City Clinic moved to Heber City. How's that doing? I understand you're serving more people than ever.
Well, what's exciting is we had always had a site in Heber where we provided contract services using a nurse practitioner there. And when she retired, we took over that space. When we looked at the zip code orientation of the people who came to our Park City clinic, you know, at least half or more were coming from outside of the Park City proper area, from Heber and the surrounding areas. And so it made sense to avail ourselves of that space in Heber. And a few weeks ago, when we accepted our check from the Park City Foundation, I was able to report we had seen 100 more people last year than the year before. You know, it is wonderful to be able to provide services in the Wasatch Mountain area.
Well, this has certainly been a rocky year, though, for Planned Parenthood. Governor Herbert said that he would withhold funding from your organization after viewing videos from the pro-life group that were edited to make it appear that Planned Parenthood was selling fetal tissue. Recently, a federal judge ruled in Planned Parenthood's favor, claiming that the governor's attempts to block funding were political, and the court ruling protects you from further attempts to block its funding, guaranteeing that the state cannot break its contract with the organization without legitimate cause. But do you always feel like you're fighting an uphill battle here in Utah?
It keeps me on my toes and young, I have to say. It's not totally an uphill battle. We have incredible support here in Utah. Last year, when the governor decided that he would issue this administrative order, we worked very closely with the health department, who was the pass-through for this federal funding, to make sure that the right people were getting the right services. The funding, to be honest, was never stopped because we filed for an injunction. We were given it. It is now almost a permanent injunction, as the governor has decided not to contest the circuit court's ruling, and we need to figure out how to put the whole issue to rest. You know, what I have to stress is this: these salacious videos that were put out across the country, nowhere was Planned Parenthood found to have done anything wrong. And the National Congress has not been able to find anything that Planned Parenthood has done wrong through five congressional committees looking at us. None of the states have found that we've done anything wrong. And to be honest, nationally, Planned Parenthood has more supporters than ever who become so frustrated with these political shenanigans. And so, sure, there are trials and tribulations, but the majority of the people honor the services that we provide for their communities and are glad that we're there making sure people have information to plan their families and live a responsible life as a sexual being.
I need to make this real quick, but in the event that Donald Trump does win the election, we know that there will be Supreme Court justices appointed, likely on the conservative side. Are you worried at all that Roe v. Wade would ever be overturned?
Oh, I am always worried. And I can't wait for November 8th to be over with, perfectly honest. And hopefully it will turn the way I want it to. But it was interesting. Just last summer, the Supreme Court ruled that the same political issues were used in Texas, and they overturned Texas laws, keeping women from being able to access abortion as a method of family planning for certain pregnancies. And so I have to believe that there are enough responsible, clear-thinking people in this country that we will prevail, and that will not be the way things go
as of November 9th.
Okay, I need to leave it there. Carrie Galloway is the president and CEO of Planned Parenthood Association of Utah. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks for asking. Have a good day.
8:42 now. Good morning. Well, the Sundance Institute is rolling out a new ticketing system after last year's system bombed. On the phone with details about what will be available and when is Heidi Bruce. She is Sundance Senior Manager for Ticketing. Good morning, Heidi.
Good morning.
So before we get to the specifics, let's just talk about the biggest concern, I think, of locals. That is the new ticketing system. You have contracted with a new company, TopTix, who has a proven history?
Yeah, they do. They have a proven history in large-scale events management and success in user experience. And we went through a lengthy RFP process and selected them from a lot of really qualified ticketing systems.
Okay, so gone are the crashes and frustrations of last year and welcome hassle-free ticket purchasing this year, huh?
Hassle-free is the goal. I don't think there's anyone who wants this this on-sale to go off without a glitch more than we do. So we've done as much as we can to make sure that that's going to happen.
All right, so let's get to the details then. Local ticket packages and passes go on sale Tuesday, October 25th at noon. This is Mountain Time. Again, this is for locals only. So Utah residents?
Yes, Utah residents. You have to have a Utah driver's license or Utah state ID.
And you would need that to once you to before you could purchase a ticket then, is that right, or a pass?
You would need that to pick up. We limit it on the website as much as possible. We lock the Utah field, and we do a lot of manual audits to make sure that only our locals are getting access to these passes and packages. And then we do make it so that you have to provide one of those two documents when you pick up in January.
All right. So do people need to log on before noon? I mean, do they get in queue earlier if they do?
Yes, that's a great question. So you can get into our queue before the site goes on sale at noon, and then right at noon it will transfer you into the site to be able to purchase. So if you want to go on and read about it ahead of time, I would recommend getting on earlier that morning. Any time from, say, 10 a.m. Mountain Time on, you should be good. And then you can just stay in the queue and get transferred over automatically.
Okay, but is that some kind of lottery then, or is it, I mean, if you start queuing up at 10 o'clock, you're going to be the first one in?
No, you're not. It's completely random.
Right.
So there's no benefit to getting there at 10 other than just reading and knowing that you've established a place and you know where you need to be. But if you get there right at 11:59, you have just as good of a shot as someone who logged on at 10.
Yeah, there is some kind of priority system, though, at work, because I think for those who may purchase the $500 level memberships to Sundance Institute, they get some kind of defined day and time?
They do. Members select on the 24th, but none of our locals' passes or packages are available during that on sale. We make it a priority to make sure that those are going to our locals, so only those items will be up on the 25th.
All right. So the pass and procedures will basically be the same as last year?
Yeah. Last year was the first time we tried the queuing system, and that part went successfully. So we're going to do that again this year to make sure that we can control the server load.
Okay. So let's talk about the options that people have to choose from. You have passes, and I'm guessing those are really probably the easiest for somebody, but also the most expensive. They can be bought for date, location, or time period, and basically you can just walk in a theater?
Yes. Our passes are good for one person. They're non-transferable, and they have a picture on them. So they do grant you access to basically whatever fits within those pass limitations. But our packages are more designed to be shared, and so that's what we would kind of encourage people to go for if they want to attend with a variety of people.
Okay, so let's talk about the, there's like the Express Pass, Second Half, the Eccles Pass, and the Off-Peak Pass. Some of those were listed as not yet available. What's that mean?
It's just simply because the on-sale hasn't happened yet. So when you get to, when the sale begins, those buttons will switch to being available. And after that point, they'll only say not yet available if they're sold out. Right now, we have complete inventory, so.
Okay. And again, that's a great opportunity. The Express Pass Second Half basically gets you into any theater from what, about Wednesday, the second weekend?
Yeah. The second half of the festival is Wednesday through Sunday. So it would get you into any screening at any theater between those dates.
All right. And then there's just the Eccles one. And I think there's also one in Salt Lake for the Grand Theater as well that would give you as many films as you want to see at that theater.
There is, yeah. The Grand Theater is one of our newer venues. It's a really beautiful, nice, big theater in Salt Lake. So it would get you into any screenings at that location. It is on a college campus, so we only have screenings on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays of the festival. So you would have opportunity for six different days. It's really good for people who are working during the week.
All right. What's the off-peak pass?
The off-peak pass is a crowd favorite because it's really good for people who want to ski during the day, who are here on vacation. It basically gets you access to screenings before 11 a.m. or after 10 p.m. So a lot of people like to go early in the morning, late at night, and do other things with their afternoon.
All right. Then we also have the ticket packages. These are a little bit different because you actually get a hard ticket. What's the benefit of this way?
I think the biggest benefit to a ticket package is you get access before individual tickets to fulfill those. So you're buying a package now, but fulfillment happens in January prior to the individual ticket on sale. So basically, there are limitations for dates and times similar to a pass, but they are designed to be shared. So you can come and go with whoever you'd like when you select your tickets.
All right. So tickets, again, this year will be $20, or are they going up?
Tickets are $20, except for first half Park City screenings went up to $25 this year. The price of the e-wait list didn't change, and the price of the passes and packages didn't change, so you're actually still able to select those screenings with those items. But we did raise that specific ticket price.
All right. But when you buy a package, it's actually more expensive than the tickets face value. How come?
That's true, yeah. Well, we also include credentials in our packages, and we value our credentials a lot because they give you access to a lot of our non-screening venues. We sell them for $300 a piece, and packages include two. So right there, you're increasing the value. But the real value is in the priority selection time in early January. If seeing specific movies are incredibly important to you, then a package is the way to go because it gives you that earlier access.
Great. And in terms of what you set aside for locals, I mean, like the popular film lovers packages, I mean, how many are actually available for locals?
I actually don't have that number offhand. I know there are hundreds, and we've increased it as much as we could as the years go on, because basically it is our most popular package for locals. The other value besides the highly discounted price of that package is that it's good for the entire duration of the festival. And all of our public packages are only good for the first or second half. So locals get, you know, that entire time period because obviously locals live here. But they also get it at a discounted price.
All right. And then for individual local ticket sales, those don't go on sale until Wednesday, January 11th at 10 a.m. Again, this will be done online, or is that done at the box office?
It's online only, and it's a three-day period. It begins on the 11th at 10 a.m., but it won't be a registration-type system, so it'll be similar to the queue that you'll experience if you go for the pass package on sale. So it's really important to remember that it begins on January 11th because, obviously, the amount of availability will dwindle if you log on the 13th.
Right. And so, again, you set aside a certain number for locals just as individual ticket sales?
Absolutely.
All right. And then we've also going to have the distribution of local tickets for Townie Tuesday and Best of Fest. When does that happen?
This year it's on January 14th. And this year it's important to note, I know a lot of the locals who come and basically camp out early in the morning. It gets really cold that time of year. And this year, instead of starting that at 10 a.m., we're going to start it at 8 a.m. to try and get people in and out as quickly as possible, and so that there isn't as lengthy of a wait time. So we will we'll distribute that the same way we have in the past. We'll have the queue system, this time not online, in an actual line, and we'll have numbers. And when you get there, we'll let you in on number availability, and we definitely make it a point at that point to check your ID and make sure you're a local.
Okay. And again, the Best of Fest will be screening Monday, January 30th. Townie Tuesday happening January 24th, and you can get, what, two tickets per ID?
Yes, and so our Best of Fest, you can get two per screening, Townie Tuesday you can get two per ID. You can't see both Townie Tuesday screenings because they overlap, so that's kind of, it would be pointless to give you access to both of those, but for Best of Fest, you can.
Okay. Anything else you think people should know? Is it just going to be SundanceFilmFestival.org or...
Yeah, I think it's really important to note that. If you go to sundance.org/ticketing, you can review your options and learn a lot about the festival. It's also important to know that we do set aside 30% of our tickets for locals. And any changes we made this year were kind of based on feedback from locals last year and in previous years. And one of the highlights to me is this year we are going to allow locals to pick up for each other, which we've never had before, which has been a big source of feedback from our locals, and I think that'll make people really happy.
So what, they would just have a copy of their ID or something?
Yes, ma'am. So for the public, we've allowed it to happen in the past, and for locals, we've always had to have them show up in person with their own IDs, but that made it difficult for husbands and wives to pick up for each other and to find time for them each to get there. So this year, if you are picking up for your partner, if you're picking up for a friend, as long as you have a copy of their local ID, we'll release it to you with a note saying, you know, that you've granted them access to do that.
Great idea. Okay, well, good luck. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Heidi Bruce, again, the Sundance Senior Manager for Ticketing. Deer Valley Resort gearing up for this winter and hosting a job fair today from 3 to 6 p.m. at the Snow Park Lodge. In the studio with details about that, Senior Communications Manager Emily Summers. Good morning.
Good morning.
Any idea how many jobs you need to fill?
We have quite a few and a really diverse offering. You have to remember we have the On Snow. We have all the restaurants. We need chefs. We have the lodging operation, and that's front desk to concierge to shuttle drivers. Huge variety.
Okay, so inside and out.
Inside and out, right. On snow and not.
Yeah. So you do this, Deer Valley does this on their own as opposed to joining the chamber job fair, or you do everything?
We kind of do everything. This one is on site right at the lodge at Snow Park, and really just to focus on what we're offering at the resort. So these are all Deer Valley Resort jobs.
Okay, and so mostly for locals as opposed to those kind of coming in for the ski season then, huh?
Yeah, if someone's already here, this is a great opportunity to see what the resort has to offer. But really looking at the local participants.
All right. So what are the benefits of working for Deer Valley?
Skiing. You get a great ski benefit. And it's really the camaraderie and being able to be at the resort all winter. There's, depending on what you do, a lot of benefits there, and they can go over all of that. The managers are all present today.
Okay. But everyone gets a ski pass, if you work a certain number.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So which of those jobs would ensure that you get the most skiing in? I mean, would it be a lifty?
Yeah, lift operators, they're definitely hiring for that. And they do schedule breaks every day to get them out on the slopes. So that's great on snow time. Ski instructors are on snow every day, all day. Just depends if that's the type of skiing and you want to share the love of the sport with our guests. So that's a lot of on snow time as well.
Okay. So if people cannot make today's job fair, can they go online to apply? Or
absolutely. It's jobs.deervalley.com, or you can contact our recruiting department via email, jobs@deervalley.com, and just send over your resume, and they'll look to see if there's something that fits. Let them know your interests.
Okay. Any other job fairs planned that you know of?
Not at this time, but we will make sure to put that on our social channels and our website as they are planned.
Okay. Any idea in terms of how the local and out-of-state employee base stacks? I mean, is it mostly locals?
Mostly, yeah. We draw a lot from Utah, a lot. We have to fill over 2,000 jobs every winter. We're lucky we have a really great retention rate, but we are looking for a lot of people in the area. We still bring in students, international students, so we have a presence there, but we are looking for a lot of people in the state.
Okay. Real quick, the 13th annual blood drive coming up. Halloween, a week from Monday.
Yes, we affectionately call that our Transylvania Tea Party. So we have the blood drive in the Snow Park Lodge on Halloween from 10 to 3. And you can call us at 649-1000 and ask to go to the HR department, and they will get you all registered.
Okay. Easier if you sign up in advance?
Yes, absolutely.
Less waiting?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you always get a good turnout for that.
Yeah. We have close to 100 participants each year.
Yeah. You guys could get the good snacks afterwards.
Yeah. It's Deer Valley. Refreshments will be served.
Yeah. Also, Deer Valley just sent out a press release highlighting a new program this year, Ski with a Champion.
Yeah. We are so lucky to be here in Park City and have so many Olympians here. And there's been a demand both from our guests and corporate groups to have that Ski with a Champion experience. We've had Heidi Volker, our ambassador of skiing, for over 20 years, and we've expanded that program to include 5 additional athletes. We have Shannon Barkey, Fuzz Feddersen, Kaylin Richardson, Jillian Botley, and Trace Worthington, and they can be booked throughout the season to ski with anyone here at Deer Valley.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a private or lesson, you know, where you'd get to the front of the line with these people as well?
Well, it's more of a private, like, experience. They know the nooks and crannies of the resort. They have all this knowledge to share, especially of the skiing industry as well as the town.
Yeah. I didn't hear Ted Ligety, but he's your newest global ambassador.
Yeah, he is actively competing. So when Ted decides to stop competing, he will be part of this program.
Okay. All right. Anything else you wanted to tell us?
Opening day is Saturday, December 3rd, and all current information is at deervalley.com.
Okay. Is there a deadline in terms of purchasing the local tickets?
Absolutely. Passes? The pass prices go up after Halloween, so keep an eye on that. Yes.
Okay. Emily, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.